It's February 17th, 2009, and I'm speaking with Paul Zimmerman. Mr. Zimmerman, can you tell me where and when you were born?
Norwich, Connecticut, it's September 23rd, 1926. I don't know what time, so I don't have a watch.
Okay. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Two brothers and one sister.
What did your parents do for a living?
Well, my father did a few things. The last things he did was at a salvage yard.
Okay.
So used car parts and used cars. That was his last career.
Where did you go to school?
At which school, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
From the grammar school up?
Yeah. Yep.
I went to Norwich, Connecticut, where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Hartford for a while, so I went to Hartford, Connecticut, and then New York, and then Providence, Rhode Island. And then I graduated high school in Jacksonville, Florida, and went to University of Florida in Gainesville.
Did you graduate from high school before the war?
No.
No, this was after.
Quit and went in the service.
Do you remember Pearl Harbor?
Mm-hmm.
What were your impressions?
Well, it was really a shock to me because I was in the movies. And they used to have movie tone news back then.
Yep.
And here, showing the news with the Japanese ambassadors talking to the United States, saying, you all have nothing to worry about. We have no argument with the United States. We're not going to bother you. And when the movie was over and I went outside and the paper boy yelling, extra, extra, Japs burn bomb Pearl Harbor. I said, wait a minute. I just saw where they are buddies. And that's what the first I saw of it. Now, I talked to some guys that were stationed there.
Mm-hmm.
I said, how did something like that happen? They said, well, they caught the planes coming in on radar, went to the commanding officers, and they said, oh, that must be some of our squadrons they forgot to notify us about. And that's how the Japanese got in there.
Was it a shocking event?
I would say so, yes.
Did you volunteer for service?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was only 17 when I went in. My parents had a sign for me to go in.
Which year was that?
44.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe the day you signed up?
I really don't remember.
Okay. What were your expectations in military service?
To come back home. I mean, I knew when I went overseas that that was it. I said goodbye to everybody. And that's why when people say how horrible it was that we dropped the atomic bomb, it bothers me because I honestly believe I would not be here today if they hadn't, because they'd have got me. And the first time we got attacked, I says, I don't know a single Japanese person. I belong back in Florida, not out here. But they made me stay there. Who didn't send me home.
Where did you train?
I went to training through Bainbridge, Maryland. And I was a motor machinist mate.
In which branch of the service?
Navy.
Navy. What was training like?
It wasn't bad. It was when we went to boot camp and I went to school. And then I got shipped over, got assigned to a ship.
Do you remember what ship?
Yeah, the first ship I was on was the AFD-5 was a floating dry dock, and I was in charge of the engine room, and we had a skipper that was a little peculiar. The only reason he got to be an officer, he'd been in the Navy over 30 years, and finally got up to be a chief, but after the third ship was sunk out from under him, they commissioned him. And
was this during the war, three ships?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And he never could remember who I was. Every time he'd see me, what are you doing here? I said, I'm in charge of the engine room. I mean, I can understand it because we did have a big crew. We had 18 people. It's hard to remember 18 people. And he had one son who he disowned, because the son committed the most horrible crime in the world. He joined the Marine Corps. As far as he was concerned, that boy was dead. And he'd sleep with a rifle over his bunk, because he knew somebody in the crew was going to kill him. And, which they wouldn't, but he's peculiar.
Sort of one day, paranoid fella.
Oh, yeah. One day he came over to me and said, get me a crew to run my boat. I want to go ashore. I said, well, I can't do that. He says, why? I said, your boat's not here. Some of the guys took it ashore. He says, that's the captain's boat. Nobody's allowed in it except the skipper of this ship. Yes, sir. Next day, get me a crew to run my boat. I says, I can't do that. He says, what do you mean you can't do that? I said, you yourself, you said, that boat belongs to the skipper. Nobody can be in it but the skipper. You got to run it. So he had to rescind that order. But, I mean, he used to drive me crazy.
Yeah.
And at one time, I thought I'd make a career in the Navy till I realized that all commanding officers are idiots. They'll drive you crazy. So when the war was over and I got a chance to get out, I got out.
Could you describe your duties as someone in charge?
Yeah, I was in charge of the engine room. Mm-hmm. And when we decommissioned that ship, I got on another ship. The other ship was the USS Homestead Rust.
Mm-hmm.
It was a geographic survey ship, but that's not what we did. I mean, it went like when they took some of the islands back, it brought the crew, you know, soldiers in there to get it. And that skipper used to drive me crazy too. And we worked with this mine officer. He says, all right, my ship will cut the mines loose that the Japanese have put in the water and you get rid of them. So the skipper says, no problem. You cut one loose, we'll shoot it and blow it up. So the mine officer says, well, you can't do that because what if you're sitting over one, we'll blow you up too. So he said, all right, what we'll do, we'll take them out to sea, stop, let them down, and take off full speed ahead, and then shoot them. I said, you can't take engines from dead idle at full speed. But what did I know? I mean, just because I was in charge of the engine room didn't mean I knew anything. He knew it all. And the reason he had his commission is for generations, everybody in his family had been to Annapolis, all the men were all admirals, so they made him an officer. He went there, but I mean, he, like the navigator, he didn't know nothing because he knew how to plot the course and he'd get us lost. So when we went to get the mines up, I says, we cannot take the engines from dead idle at full speed. But I mean, what did I know? So he insisted that's what we do, and we warped the shafts and start taking in water, and the ship started sinking. And I couldn't pump it out fast enough, so we finally had to go into port and get off the ship. Because it was sinking, there's nothing we could do. So he destroyed that ship. So then I decided, that's it, I'm getting out of this Navy.
Mm-hmm. This was after the war?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right after it ended.
Getting back to training, where did you deploy from?
Well, after I finished my training, they sent me to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went from San Francisco to the Philippines.
On which boat?
That was on a troop ship. That's why I didn't get assigned to a ship till I got over there. And when I got to Manila, it blew my mind. That night, here's this building, big building with a big neon sign, Coca-Cola. I said, wait a minute. I'm in another country, but actually that was part of the United States then. Mm-hmm. But it was peculiar seeing that. And there was just an experience being over there. Another thing that got me, when we took, after we took Corregidor back, you know, it's an island with a bunch of mountains. I walked up on the beach, and here was this dead Jap Marine. Had a bullet hole right between the eyes, 7 feet tall. I said, wait a minute, something's wrong here. They little people. Went further in, and they had 25 prisoners, Jap Marines, every one of them 7 feet or older, I mean taller. Found out they were from one of the islands they come from. I think, don't they have a basketball player here that's 7 feet tall from there? And the Japanese were really nice people. Because, like, there was this hospital cave. It was full of wounded soldiers, doctors, and nurses, and they sealed it off. We didn't open it because there'd be nothing but bones in there. That's how they were. And they were so sure they were going to win. I went through this plane we shot down. It was full of this money. It was Japanese money with English on it. They issued their people so they'd have spending money when they took the United States over, when they came here. And they were sure they were going to win. When I talked to the people at Bataan, they talk about the Death March. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
We actually did a documentary on it. Yeah.
So you know what they did. And they said anytime a Filipino tried to give an American soldier some water, he'd either get shot or thrown into the line. And at the end of the war, when we got the prisoners released, I never saw anything so sickening in my life. There wasn't a man there that weighed 70 pounds, bones sticking out the side. And we didn't treat our prisoners like that. Because I remember before I went in the Navy, I worked for this company just for a short while. This is a magazine company that had to deliver magazines over to Camp Blanding in Jacksonville, to the PX. I pulled up to the PX one day, and here comes his Jeep. Pulled up the same time, out steps this Army officer, German Army officer, goes in there shopping. That's how our prisoners were treated. He had his own Jeep, money to go shopping in the PX and buy things. And that's the difference between us and other people.
Just going back to the cave, what happened before? They sealed up all the patients?
Yeah, they sealed the entrance to the cave. And so, I mean, we couldn't open it because, I mean, there'd be nothing but bones in there. Mm-hmm. The doctors, nurses, and patients all died.
So where did you go from the Philippines?
Oh, back home.
Okay.
Like when they first decommissioned that floating dry dock, was turned over to the Army, and they said they'd give me a commission, make me an officer if I wanted to stay with it. I said, I don't want to stay here. I want to go home. But I didn't get to go home. Then they put me on another ship. So then after that ship was skipper screwed it up, then I didn't get assigned another ship. I got to go home.
Was this the ship that was taking care of the mines? Yeah. Okay. Can you tell me a little bit more about the Philippines, what leave was like and living? You were in Manila, you said?
It was, the first ship I was on was stationed near Bataan, mm-hmm. between Bataan and Corregidor. And we worked with the Army doing Army ships. The Army had a bunch of ships of their own. And we'd go into over on Bataan to the, at night and weekend and just piddle around. And then after that, when I got on that other ship, we started out of Manila and then went to a few other islands, and then skipper caused the ship to get destroyed. And I'm sure they didn't do nothing to him.
So you were there when the Bataan camps were liberated?
Yeah.
What could you describe what that was like?
Well, I think the town had already been, when we got there, I think it had already been, the Japanese were gone from there. They were all prison camps. So, those people were already free. Mm-hmm. You're taking that back.
So how did you get back home?
On the ship. Mm-hmm.
Did you have enough points to return, or how did that work?
they sent me back, and then being the war was over, I finally got to get out.
Do you remember the atomic bombs being dropped? What was that?
Well, I didn't see that. I wasn't near that, but I remember them dropping it. I can't tell you much about it because I didn't see it happen. And I understand it made a mess, but at least it saved my life. But when I went in the Navy, I joined the Navy Air Force to be a pilot, because all my life growing up, I wanted to be a pilot. But when I got to where they sent me, I said, wait a minute, this is not where I'm supposed to be. So I went down to office. Yeah, I looked over my records. Oh, well, because I enlisted in Jacksonville, lived in Jacksonville when I was living in. He said, they messed up your stuff in Jacksonville. Go sue us. Well, you can't sue them. And by the end of the war, I wanted nothing to do with an airplane. Didn't want to go near one. And the only thing I could figure was the Jap planes that bombed us and the ones that got shot down that affected me. And I did not go in an airplane till my grandson got married in Chicago. I guess I was about 78. 79, first time I went in a plane. That's the only time. I still never went there, went to Chicago and back.
What was returning home like?
Good. Mm-hmm. I returned home, went back to school and graduated high school and then went to university.
Did you take advantage of the GI Bill?
Yeah.
And what
I went on a GI Bill.
What courses did you take?
Accounting, business. Yeah, my Uncle Sam sent me to college.
How had the country changed after the war? Did you notice any changes?
Well, I guess things were a little different. We didn't have all the people being killed then, but now we got another one. Mm-hmm. We had a few more since then.
Did you marry after the war?
About 5 years after I got out.
Now, where did you live when you got out?
Jacksonville.
Jacksonville.
Then my parents moved to Gainesville.
What was Gainesville like in those days?
It was a big city with 20,000 people. And my freshman year, the Gainesville Sun said, the university does not have room for so many students. No place to put 4,000 students. So we had these wooden buildings from Camp Blanding we had classes in. And with no air conditioning, in the summertime, I messed up, went to summer school too. And it was awful. It was so hot. It was all boys, and then they let the girls come, and they took over our school.
Were these mostly people coming back from the war?
Yeah, the normal enrollment was 2,000. We doubled it to 4,000, but the other 2,000 was returning veterans.
Were you the first person in your family to go to college?
My father was.
Okay.
And then I went. Well, I had an uncle that went.
Could you tell me a little bit more about going to school at UF in those days?
Well, it was a lot nicer. I used to park my car in whatever building I had a class in, get out of class, and drive to the next one. And I was very patriotic. I painted my car orange and blue so it would fit in the campus.
What sorts of things did you do for fun?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't do too much for fun. I had to work while I was in school, too, work for my father. Well, I guess went to football games, which I really didn't enjoy, but because I'm not interested in sports, but I went to them and just piddled around and then met my wife. And so then I had to go to Jacksonville to go see her, had dates.
How did you meet your wife?
It's very peculiar. Well, when I lived in Jacksonville, I took this friend of mine home one day. He says, you want to meet my sister? She's home from college. She went to FSU. I said, no, I don't want to meet your sister. And after we moved to Gainesville and I became a student, one time this friend of mine says, you got a date for the Florida-Georgia game? Because I had a car and he didn't. And I says, no. He said, well, if I get my date to get you a date, then we can go ride up there together. It's all right, what the heck? And she was the blind date. So I said, it was ordained. First, a brother tried to introduce me to her, and then a friend got me. So I was trapped right from the beginning. And we got a mixed marriage because she went to FSU and I went to UF.
Oh, really?
But it was Florida State College for Women, which, and this was the boys' school.
What was your first job after the war?
What did I do after the war? I'm thinking. I can't remember.
And after college?
And then I went to school, graduated high school, because I didn't graduate high school before I went in.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Jacksonville School of Technology, and which doesn't exist anymore, and graduated from that. And then my family moved to Canada. Oh, I know. My father had a fruit store, fruit stand. Well, it was a little type grocery store type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked there part-time while I was in school. And then moved to Gainesville. And I went to university and worked. My father opened up a salvage yard, so I worked in part-time after school when I wasn't in class.
Did you receive any medals, honors, awards for your service? No.
No, I wasn't a hero.
Was it difficult to relate your experiences during the war to those that remained at home?
No, no problem.
Are you active in veterans organizations?
I belong to the American Legion, but I don't do much of anything.
How did your wartime experience change your perceptions of other wars?
You got me lost there.
did your wartime experiences affect your view of other wars or war in general?
Well, I didn't think wars were a very good thing because people are being killed for nothing. But I guess that's something we'll always have. And I don't think it's a good thing, but you've got to protect yourself. You don't really have a choice.
If there's anything else you'd like to talk about, please let me know. Are there any other stories that you can think of from the war?
I can't think of any more.
Okay. Any humorous incidents?
Well, I guess there were some. Can't remember them.
Okay.
Right, but the people in the Philippines were very friendly.
What were they like?
Well, for one thing, I guess they've been the Americans protected them and liberated them. They were very happy with them. They were very friendly and did things and tried to treat them nice. And a lot of girls wanted to marry Americans, so they come to the United States. And I don't know, I guess a few of them did.
Yeah. Um, What sort of things did you do for R&R in the Philippines?
Not much. We'd go, well, like when I was over near Bataan, at first, a bunch of us at night were going over on the beach and go to ball and drink. And I got to thinking one time, I'm not going to be able to go home after the war because my mother ain't going to put up with an alcoholic. And she'll kill me. And one night, there was about four of us, I guess, four or five, in this bar, and the other guys passed out. And some guys came from the ship to take them back. And I said, oh, I'm fine. And I'm walking down the road, and this army truck was coming, and the lights kept getting bigger and bigger. And I blinked. And then when I opened my eyes again, I was laying on my bunk on the ship. And about 2 weeks later, I had to take a party into Manila to get supplies and food and all. So met with some of my buddies, went over to the officers' club, and the bartender was about from here to that wall. He's pouring the liquor, and I got sick. And that was the end of my drinking career.
Really?
For years, I couldn't touch it. Now, I mean, if I'm at some occasion, I might have a mixed drink. One is all I can handle. So I got the cure.
How many children do you have?
Three girls.
And what do they do?
One's a computer person. They have degrees in computer science. Another one is an attorney. Another one is, I don't know just what she is, she's superintendent in charge of the baseball stadium down in Miami of the employees in the office.
Is there anything else you can think of that you'd like to talk about?
Not that I can think of. Just that I was happy when the war was over.
Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Zimmer.
I knew there couldn't be a whole lot I could tell you.
It's been good.
Do a whole lot of stuff.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.